I'm here with Nanaba and Samir, who are Gallup area followers of the Baha'i Faith, which is among a number of ways in which local residents explore spirituality. We do have members of the Muslim community. We have obviously a Christian faith, which is very embedded in the area. And there also are a few practitioners of what we might call traditional native spiritual practices, but in some cases those fold into each other in this area. For you, Nanaba, and you, Samir, welcome so much to KGLP.
I would like to start with the prayer and then to do with the unity of all mankind. And this is written by the founder of the Baha'i Faith, and his name is Baha'u'llah, which is translated, if you translate it to English, which is glory of God. So that's what Christ said, I'm going to be coming back as a glory of God. So if you translate it to Arabic, will be Baha'u'llah. So he wrote this unity prayer. Oh my God, oh my God, unite the hearts of thy servants and reveal to them thy great purpose. May they follow thy commandments and abide in thy law. Help them, O God, in their endeavor, and grant them strength to serve thee. O God, leave them not to themselves, but guide their steps by the light of thy knowledge, and cheer their hearts by thy love. Verily, thou art their helper and their Lord. Baha'u'llah.
What are some things that come to mind when we talk about how Baha'i looks at the world, looks at the universe, as, say, compared to some of the other major religions, or minor religions for that matter?
Would you like to read this one?
Okay. So there are 12 principles to which Baha'u'llah has brought to this humanity at this age. The Baha'i Faith teaches the oneness of God, the common foundation of all revealed religions, the oneness of mankind, independent investigation of truth, the essential harmony of science and religion, the elimination of all prejudice, religious, national, racial, and economic, spiritual solutions to economic problems, universal compulsory education, the adoption of universal and auxiliary language, world peace upheld by a world spiritual government, equality of men and women.
I hope that answers most of the answers your question.
In the Baha'i Faith, do you think of the founder as a prophet, or is there another way that we might look at the founder of Baha'i?
Sure. So there are many words to describe a holy one in Navajo, Dien, Nalini. God, the creator, has sent down messengers, and we can call them messengers, prophets. It's really preferred to whom you're engaged in a conversation with. Most recently, I've been in a conversation with friends where we have been saying manifestation. Manifest means to reveal something that has not been known before. So a manifestation or a prophet is to whom we are calling Baha'u'llah. And there's actually twin prophet founders within the Baha'i Faith. The Bab, which means the gate, who is the forerunner to the teachings of Baha'u'llah and Baha'u'llah.
In comparing other faiths in which there might be a designated place like a synagogue, a mosque, a church, a hogan, are there designated places, or is Baha'i practiced wherever the followers gather?
In the cities large enough that they have enough Baha'is there, they have a like a house of worship. For instance, in, one of them is in Chicago, Illinois, the house of worship there. And then, say, like in Phoenix, they have a small house of worship there. So it's kind of hard to accommodate people in one house for their prayers and so forth. So we build house of worship. Continental-wise, each continent has its own house of worship there. One in Frankfurt, one in Chicago, one in Kampala, one in Panama, and one in Samoa.
And recently a newly dedicated one in Chile.
In Chile,
in Santiago,
right.
Chile.
In the Gallup area, McKinley County, Apache County, northwest New Mexico, northeast Arizona, do you gather to commune in the faith? Is there a private residence where you gather, a public place? Have you thought about something more permanent?
Most of the time we take turns. So like one time is be in this house, and then the next time it will be another house and so forth. But we do have a Native American Baha'i Institute in Hauk, Arizona. I'll let Nanaba to speak about that because she kind of very close to that area. So go ahead, Nanaba. Yeah,
sure. So Baha'is gather. We don't have a church that we go to once a week. There, we gather every 19 days. A Baha'i month is 19 days. And so there are three portions to it, to which, as Samira referenced, it's a rotating community effort in which there's no physical structures are really needed because every day one is held accountable to their actions to our Creator or our Lord. And so every 19 days there's a spiritual portion to which we're reading the writings of the twin holy ones from the Baha'i faith. And then there is an administrative portion to which the affairs of the community are consulted on, maybe the local fund, for example. And then there's the social portion to which there's food and socializing and acquainting ourselves with neighbors and friends. And at a local level, the Baha'i Institute is there. It's like a community center, and it's offering programs, but it's there for whatever use the Baha'is and the wider community wishes to use it.
In the practice of many faiths, certainly in the Christian faith, especially in the West, there has been a tendency for many to feel that what they do at worship doesn't tie directly into their everyday lives, and you find many people behaving in ways that don't seem to subscribe to the ways of the messenger or the prophet, but yet they feel, oh, if we go to the church, then we'll be blessed and our sins will be forgiven, and then we can do whatever we want during the rest of the week. From what I gathered from what you were saying about the basic principles and about the nature of how you live, great emphasis is given on how you live each day and not just what you do when you gather for meditation or prayer.
That's correct, right? We have to account ourselves every day. So especially before you go to bed, you think about what you've done today, how you improve yourself. So next day will be better than previous days.
There's actually a quote, bring thyself to account each day, ere thou art summoned to a reckoning. And we never know the end, our own personal end, but we can strive for excellence spiritually every day. And, you know, it's very closely to walking in beauty. Hojo go na shado, I walk in beauty, is something that you're striving and living every day.
Nanaba, are you familiar with many of the traditional spiritual practices of Native peoples in this area? And if so, how does Baha'i relate to that?
I was raised by my grandmother in the heart of the Navajo Reservation, and I myself grew up in Lukachukai, Arizona, which is about 100 miles from here. And my grandmother, I am fourth generation Baha'i. My grandmother found the faith in the early 60s with her husband, Chester Khan, Annie and Chester Khan. And they decided to tackle a question about what is worth preserving in our culture when they found the Baha'i faith. And because it empowered them to know unity in diversity, which doesn't mean sameness or similarity, but celebrating the uniqueness of each culture and what is worth preserving. I am familiar with Huizhonje, the beauty and blessing way ceremony. Some of those chants are speaking of a unity, a unification of people. And for me, that is something that I find that I read in the Baha'i writings every day, and we as Baha'is are striving to translate the writings into action. And there are many similarities that we are learning and exploring at the Native American Baha'i Institute, particularly around the Blessing Way. One of the names of Baha'u'llah that we found in the Navajo philosophy and the Navajo stories is the Blessed Beauty. And that's an ancient way and an ancient name that has come to renew itself. And I myself, my own current understanding and journey is that this is a continuation of being a spiritual being, moving on into the fifth world, this glittering world, and a message that will carry humanity forward to maturity.
And would the fifth world be that beyond this plane?
This is actually the fifth world. Navajos have emerged through four worlds into the fifth, which is this, the glittering world. And the Baha'i faith does have, it, like many other religions and faiths, the acknowledgement of the soul in eternal worlds of God.
Very good. And just to clarify an earlier comment, obviously there are many practitioners of, say, for example, the Christian faith or other faiths that do value how you behave day to day, how you live your life day to day. You know, in the Christian faith, you talk about how important it is that the practitioner have good works in their life. What I'm saying is that maybe in Western culture that has been corrupted for many people, and they latch on to the church experience as an excuse that absolves them for everything else they do in their lives. For Baha'i, generally that would be a case where you are known by your good works every day, by how you live your life.
Because you are responsible between you and God, so yeah. You just kind of, you have to meditate every day, so, and make yourself accountable for everything you do, so, and go from there. So hopefully next day I'm better than today. So
we often hear, especially in the Christian faith, about that concept of proselytization, where the missionary of the church is charged with going out and educating the masses and bringing them to the church. Well, I think there may be an aspect of that in many faiths, but does the Baha'i faith have a philosophy with regard to outreach?
Yes. We present the message, but we expecting people to read it on their own, with their own eyes, hear it with their own ears, and then they can make a decision from there. It's not kind of converting people, because they have to learn it their own. God gave us all these senses so to investigate. And then so we're expecting people to do the same thing. We might just tell them there's this this Baha'i faith here. It's up to you if you want to investigate in it. So do you want to say anything?
No, just the principle of independent investigation of truth that
right.
Baha'u'llah has brought.
Right.
How do we discern truthhood from falsehood? It's acquiring those senses of the inner and the outer senses. Some of the inner spiritual senses are imagination, comprehension, memory, the common faculty between the five outer senses. So it's developing those spiritual perceptions to discern.
The other thing is, it's my parent. They didn't say, this is the religion you're going to be. They put me in different schools. I was in Catholic school for 2 years. I was in Muslim schools, learning about Quran, and learning about Christ. And then we had a teacher came on Sundays and taught us about Judaism, and we learned about that. And then we have to make our decision from there, so by investigating for them. Mentioning about all these religions, we have to believe in all of the religions, because they are all true, they are all from one God, and they came to serve certain period of time. And then next messenger comes and then fulfill the previous one and continue to the next one.
The willingness to endure persecution in one's faith. Certainly, as with other messengers, prophets, etc., the founder of Baha'i faced great persecution, was imprisoned for a long, long time. Without going into detail, Samir, I know that your family and practitioners of Baha'i, when you were growing up, were also persecuted, and this actually led in part to your leaving the area where you grew up.
That's true, right. Going back to beginning of the when Baha'i faith started, that the persecution was really kind of high at that time. So a lot of Baha'is, they are killed, 20,000 of them. So in different ways they've been persecuted and so forth. So, and then some of my ancestors, they were in that boat. So, but happened that I born and raised in Iraq, and it was some persecution, not just on the Baha'is, other minorities too. And then we kind of decided just our options is just to leave.
And again, this is something that's often common to members of certain faiths. Muslims have certainly been persecuted. Practitioners of Judaism were definitely persecuted over time, from the Catholics during, you know, the Inquisition to Nazi Germany and others. Mm-hmm. But the point is that Baha'i, as with other faiths, I think, is looking at how we deal with that pain and how you move forward. And that's a part of it, is how you deal day to day with the challenges in the world?
Well, most of this persecution, this comes from ignorance. How can you hate ignorant person? I mean, they are ignorant, so they did it, and we have to forgive them. So if we don't forgive them, then this kind of... it'll be a long story. So we have to forgive. So
another aspect that's different perhaps in some Western sectors, certainly in the United States, where we have laws for separation of church and state, that is not the case in many countries where the religion is integrated, the what we might call the majority religion also is directly tied to the government. And if you are in the minority, then it is not a good time for you as a practitioner of a minority faith, at least as it applies in the United States. Do you know of anything in the Baha'i philosophy that would address that concept of the separation of church and state?
You know, I think we're the Baha'is, a question occupies the Baha'is around the world as to developing a culture of learning and taking on the requisite qualities and attitudes of a humble posture of one who's learning. And I think day to day, with the world in its state, in our country, in its current state, the elimination of prejudice, we strive to have to make our actions beautiful prayers day by day, and to do away with contention and strife, and and not even to backbite is one of the highest forms of worship we can offer to a community and to ourselves and our family. Loving all humanity.
Loving all humanity, right? Just kind of the oneness of human mankind. So we're trying to be loving to everybody.
And by extension, I think the concept of peaceful coexistence, to acknowledge the right of anyone else to believe as they will, as long as they are not hurting others in the process.
God's give us choice, so and we have to respect that choice. So whatever you pick your choice, as long as you said, like you said, as long as we don't hurt anybody, so be it. So we have to respect that choice. So.
It does not strike me that Baha'i has the same detail of ritual that you might find in Catholicism or Judaism or even Islam, but are there traditional ceremonies or rituals that Baha'i is known for among its followers? not necessarily right. private matters.
Right. Not much is private, I don't think, you know. I think, again, going back to the principle of unity and diversity, especially here living among my own Navajo people and being a Navajo Baha'i, means that we are in an age where we get to address what those spiritual teachings have been and what will carry a population, a historically significant population forward. What comes to mind, actually, to your question is, again, developing those spiritual powers to be able to discern truth from falsehood in a living community where we're revolutionizing interactions at the grassroots, the individual, the community, and its institutions. And for one like myself, to be able to discern superstition from irrational thought and what is the nobility and humanity that can move forward. And faith and reason are such of those attributes of the human soul that we possess that are two quality attributes that help us discern in an advancement. But I think we have an administrative part that's very beautiful in its structure, in its origin, and again, one of the principles is world peace upheld by a world spiritual government, and that's something that we're striving to put into place as Baha'is.
The United Nations, that's a good example.
In the United States and in the Western world, someone can profess to be practicing the Christian faith, but yet they can be very progressive in favor of reducing the impact on the environment. They can be in favor of diversity and other things. Or they could practice the Christian faith and be very conservative, might be unaccepting of people of diverse backgrounds. So that is quite a dichotomy. Of course, that's a very huge umbrella, and there's lots of diversity in political belief underneath that. But having said that, within the Baha'i faith, do you see that kind of political variation within the group as a whole of practitioners, given that politics and faith matters don't always mix well?
One thing is we're not, as a Baha'is, we don't get involved in politics, because politics is just kind of helps to divide us. Our principle is to unite us. Like, say, in Gallup here, the Baha'is, which is the foundation of the Baha'i faith. And then on top of that, the group, they elect 9 members, and we call it Local Spiritual Assembly, which is sits on the Baha'i Society. All the local spiritual assemblies, they elect National Spiritual Assembly, which is located in Wilmette, Illinois. And then all the national spiritual assemblies on all of the world, they elect Universal House of Justice. So if any there is an issue, things like that, you take it to the local spiritual assembly, and then they make a decision there for you. And then those members of local spiritual assembly, they don't publicize themselves. Pretty much is you'll be surprised who's got elected, because it's all secret ballot. So you just pick the one you think it's, and without any advertisement. So if you got elected, then you should serve in that capacity.
Baha'is don't campaign. There's no campaigning. Earlier mentioned, it's just by one's character and good deeds. How is one known in the Baha'i community?
The Gallup area Baha'i community is often seen in local events. We don't hear too much about Baha'i-focused events, but there are Baha'i practitioners that we will see at events such as Martin Luther King Day or some of the interfaith gatherings that they have monthly here. Can you speak to how you as individuals who are very active in the community as individuals hold up your Baha'i beliefs as you engage in the community?
I'm one of them that I support that. I attend that meeting pretty much every month there. So they just bring us together. And the pastor of that church, she was saying, one of the quotes from the Bible, it says, Christ said, love thy neighbor. And then she said, how can we love our neighbor if we don't know them. So then she's making big efforts that to bring people different background, different denomination to join and consult with each other.
And that's, I believe, Reverend Lorelei Kay of Westminster Presbyterian.
Yes.
What are some other ways that you can think of that in your daily lives Baha'i becomes very important to you?
Trying to help the fellow mankind. If somebody needs help, be helpful in different ways. Like in my area, I would like to kind of help fifth graders and up with the math and sciences and arts and things like that. And I've been doing it for the last 10 years. So I go to schools and then introduce them to these areas because education is very important. Like in Iran right now, education is forbidden for the Baha'is and minorities. So there's a logo that says education is not a crime. So I have the opportunity here to do that for other people.
For you, Nanaba, growing up as a Baha'i and being in a family, a fourth generation Baha'i, what was your experience growing up with other children who were from families who practiced Christianity or other variations of maybe other traditional beliefs? What was that like for you? What are some things that you would advise for someone who is a Baha'i practitioner or a practitioner of any faith who is in the minority?
Growing up, I always thought I would be in education of some kind, some sort. And I was always inspired by my middle school teachers. I went to Saley Elementary School school. And I found an affinity and love for sports as a way of kind of an outlet and creating team dynamics. And so I found myself coming back to the reservation in 2011 and seeing a great need for after-school programs, after-school spaces that are safe. And I kind of reintegrated into the Baha'i community of Hauk in Burntwater area near Sanders. And the Baha'is have been learning about a spiritual empowerment program for junior youth, for specifically for middle-aged students, and learning that this age generally globally seen is irresponsible, responsive, kind of just consumed by the forces, social forces. And I saw that here on our own reservation and decided that I'd like to continue to work with this young group. So every day I'd go out and visit the community, the kids outside, and gradually 7 years later till now, there's a program developed in our area that provides a safe place free of ridicule, and it's an empowerment place. So they're talking about spiritual education, mothers and fathers, and now I'm working at the level of families, creating spaces for families to discuss these kinds of questions of in the context of advancement of a community and a health, agriculture. We invite speakers to families and the middle school kids. And so my giving back and my growing up, I was baptized at a young age as well, and went to Bible studies. Kids want something to do on weekends, and so I participated in many other churches as well growing up, and just a need for young people to be themselves.
That's something that I've heard from many people who don't find members of their faith community in a certain region. They may find ways to engage in another form, mm-hmm. but still preserving their feelings about their own faith. That must be hard, but as long as you have your inner space partitioned so that you know who you are, then that can be very valuable. For many growing up, the pressure of the outside environment makes things very difficult for any spiritual life. How do you get centered in your faith when the stresses of the world intrude?
We are going through a very difficult time. As you notice that there is, the whole world is kind of changing. And then just like a forest, when you have the forest with a lot of trees and has bugs in it and dead trees, and then the only thing is to clean it up as a fire comes in and then just knock everything down and then new growth comes up. So I think we're going through the same scenario here. We just have to concentrate not on the bad things, on the good things that we can dwell on. One of the Baha'is mentioned that the world is going through like an egg, going through incubation, and then the chick is ready to come out. Everything around the chick is getting kind of rotten a little bit. And when the eggs, the chick comes out, and then we're going through that dilemma here. So, and we should look at the sky is getting all cloudy and black, but there is a one little hole there, light coming through. Concentrate on that. So, and then the rest of it is going to go away.
When we talk about identity politics, a majority group harassing a minority group, it's, I think, important to remember that how we label ourselves individually is not necessarily what people see. A very diverse group practicing Baha'i. We have diverse communities practicing other faiths, and some members of law enforcement might look at someone and profile them and say, oh, you're this, and we're going to treat you this way. But they don't relate to what you believe. They don't relate to how you grew up. It's all about how you appear. Mm-hmm. For Baha'i practitioners, does this ability to center, to follow the basic beliefs, help to deal with that overarching aspect of what might be termed injustice in the world?
One of Baha'u'llah's teachings is, ye are the fingers of one hand and the members of one body, and the fruits of one tree and the flowers of one garden. And so as Baha'is, to overcome that kind of prejudice or, you know, judging others, it's really takes an active individual, a conscious individual. And through prayer and kind of this awakening to oneself of our thoughts. Something I constantly say to myself when I'm out in town in Walmart is, confer upon me thoughts which may change this world into a rose garden. And so every interaction becomes now endowed with a new meaning, a new sense of, you know, the biggest question that occupies the worldwide Baha'i community is, how can we best contribute to the advancement of society? And so there are many social discourses and spaces and within the Baha'i community that we're studying guidance and writings and asking ourselves this very question: how do we overcome, how do we address and overcome the injustices in society? And it takes a very heightened spiritual individual, but also we realize that they can come from any walks of life, interested in transformation of self and community, and without even saying you're Baha'i or you're not a Baha'i, you're in or you're out, but that we're all on equal footing, all on equal ground, advancing together regardless of our beliefs and our backgrounds. And I think that's where the unity and the oneness of mankind, this principle, comes into play, that, you know, like-minded organizations and friends, we can all have this same mission to advance our communities on equal footing.
And that also relates to the earlier discussion about the importance of education, the philosophy of bringing education to a community regardless of background. And we're not talking about education only about a faith. We're talking about all education, literacy, STEAM, as you mentioned, you know, the science, technology, engineering, arts, math, all together, all of it, history. And that, without that education, everything else is harder to follow.
One of the principles says science and religions has to go hand in hand, like wings of one bird. How can the bird flies with one wing? So, excuse me. And then, so one wing is the science, and then the other wing is religion. So otherwise, if we concentrate on one or the other, we go to really to the extreme of superstition.
And then the opposite of that would be materialism, which we see now.
Right.
Without religion, we have, you know, crass materialism, you know, leading many of our young people.
Right? So we need to keep that in balance all the time. So, and same thing with the equality of men and women. So it has to be like a wings of one bird. So we need both of them.
If there is someone listening, if they're curious, is there contact information?
There is a website, www.bahai.org. There's also a phone number, 1-800-22-UNITE, UNITE.
Okay. Is there anything else? No, you know, this could go on quite a while. Is there anything else that each of you might like to add to our listeners who may have just walked in on this conversation?
It's very important to respect each other's beliefs. So no matter what you believe in, I have total respect to that person. So. And that's, and I expect people treat me the same way.
To be a Baha'i simply means to love the world and to work for its betterment. And to be a Baha'i, there is that acknowledgement that Abraham planted the seed of faith. And this tree has been growing ever since through the ages. Krishna, Abraham, Zoroaster, Buddha, Christ, Muhammad, and now the latest manifestation, Baha'u'llah. And that this tree is now ready, it has fruits, and the fruits are now to be plucked by humanity. And so what are those fruits that are ready? And welcome everyone's questions and participating in community discourse around empowerment. There is a short quote and prayer by Baha'u'llah. O Son of Spirit, the best beloved of all things in my sight is justice. Turn not away therefrom, if thou desirest me, and neglect it not that I may confide in thee. By its aid thou shalt see with thine own eyes, and not through the eyes of others, and shalt know of thine own knowledge, and not through the knowledge of thy neighbor. Ponder this in thy heart, how it behooveth thee to be. Verily justice is my gift to thee, and the sign of my loving kindness. Set it then before thine eyes. Baha'u'llah.
I've been speaking with Nanaba and Samir about the Baha'i faith. I thank you both for coming by today.
Thank you for having us.